Tom Eblin, the literary liaison at the Carnegie Center for Literacy and Learning, has joined our interviewing team, and he'll be talking with Kentucky authors about their latest works. His first in this ongoing series is with the author of a book that takes us back more than half a century and reminds us in these times of crisis that in many ways we've been here before.
University of Kentucky history professor Tracy Campbell is the author of several fine books, and this new one may be the best yet. The Year of Peril, published by Yale University Press, tells about many largely forgotten aspects of America's most perilous year, 1942. In our rose-colored memory, this was the year Americans put aside their differences and came together to begin fighting World War II. But Campbell's book reminds us that differences of politics, class, and especially race did not go away, and in some cases they were intensified, as the nation already stressed by the Great Depression saw normal life upended by war. This was a year when America appeared to be losing the war, and efforts to quickly build planes, tanks, and battleships were hampered by fears of inflation and a severe shortage of rubber. While most politicians of both parties supported President Franklin Roosevelt's leadership of war mobilization, many Southern Democrats seemed more adamant about preserving white supremacy than fighting Hitler and Imperial Japan. Tracy is here today to talk with us about the Year of Peril. Dr. Campbell, welcome to Eastern Standard.
Hi, Tom. Good to be with you.
Well, so why did you think it was important to write this book now?
Well, when you say now, it took me a little over 11 years of thinking about it and researching and writing. And it started actually in another crisis that I was living through in 2008 with the financial crisis and thinking, what does a society, what does a government, what do a people go through when they go through these kinds of moments of crisis and notions of survival? And so I wrote this mostly at a time in which I wondered if anybody would even care to think about a time of crisis and thinking about when you wipe the slate clean and what might happen afterwards. And so I finished it, I think, right around the holidays of 2019. I remember writing something about people might not recognize what's going to happen here, with stores saying, don't buy too much, only take what you need. And I thought, who in the world's going to, you know, recognize that period? So it took quite a while, but it was something that I found to be a revealing moment. I think people or organizations, and particularly societies, really are there's not a moment quite like a crisis to really study and see the true national character come to the fore.
Mm-hmm. Well, what surprised you most in your research?
There were a lot of surprises. I think if there was one thing that I wasn't expecting to do was write about the history of things that didn't happen. But that kind of came about from looking at a war rumor project that the federal government undertook in 1942 to try and understand what they didn't use the term misinformation then, they used the term rumor. But I wanted to try and understand what people were telling each other. And I think the most surprising thing, the government categorized these levels of rumors that the one that was repeated the most was what the government termed hate rumors, geared toward African-Americans, Japanese-Americans, along lines of race and ethnicity. And just kind of digging through that and burrowing through that to see the levels of anger and racism, anti-Semitism, just kind of that kind of bigotry was not something I was expecting, at least not in that kind of way.
Well, you're right that it had a pretty big effect on the war effort. So talk a little about bigotry and racism and how that played into some of what happened.
One of the tough things is to look at anything kind of in a vacuum, because there's so many things happening at the same time, whether it's fear of further attack, fear of what might happen with the economy, fear might what happened to local communities. And so let's just say on the West Coast in January and February, there was widespread fear of what might happen, that just kind of like after 9/11 with the notion of when's the next attack going to occur. In 1942, it was just assumed that there would be more and more Japanese attacks on the West Coast and perhaps German attacks on the East Coast. And so by February, that it had reached kind of a fever pitch in the West Coast, enough to cause President Roosevelt to sign the famous Executive Order 9066 that interned enemy alien, mostly Japanese Americans, into internment camps throughout the West, solely on the notion of what they might do. General DeWitt, who was head of the effort in the West Coast, I remember this quote that even though nothing has happened in his mind, that just proved that they're waiting for it to happen. So those kinds of logical leaps were things that were kind of commonplace in the early, really frightful months.
Well, then also in white supremacy, because I remember you mentioned that in terms of the restrictions on Italian Americans were a lot less severe and then were later eased, with Roosevelt kind of making the comment, I guess, that he thought a lot of them were opera singers. The difference between that and how the Japanese were treated.
Well, there were so many more German Americans and Italian Americans. And even though all three groups were involved in Executive Order 9066, the sheer numbers, particularly throughout the country and in cities like New York, say even Louisville or Cincinnati, made interning German Americans or Italian Americans just impossible. And you have to also remember 1942 is an election year. It's not a presidential election, but it's a congressional off-year election. And both parties were trying to position themselves in ways to do well in November. So being seen as the party that might intern German or Italian Americans was something that Roosevelt and the Democrats wanted to avoid. So that's why those restrictions were quickly taken off.
There's a lot about economics in the book, and I think a lot of people don't really think of that in terms of the war. But in addition to raising money by taxes and borrowing, there was a huge issue about trying to prevent inflation. And the guy who was kind of in charge of that was a really colorful character, Leon Henderson, who I don't think many people have ever heard of.
No. To me, Leon Henderson is really one of the unsung heroes of 1942 in the war effort. And besides maybe a few things on Wikipedia, there's not even so much as an article about him. And I hope that I could bring him a little to the surface, because if we could take ourselves back to 1942 right now, anything we bought or sold or a place that we wanted to rent would be determined by Leon Henderson and his office called the Office of Price Administration. So I remember once reading about something called the Biscuit and Pretzel Subcommittee, and the notion of people in Washington determining the prices of pretzels or biscuits. But the whole notion was to keep some kind of containment on the kind of spending that we were undergoing in 1942, which is kind of mind-boggling when you look at what we were doing in 42 and 43 and certainly by 44 as compared to anything before that. It was spending on a scale that we had never even contemplated. Usually that produces ruinous inflation, which, if it had occurred in the 42 or 43 period, would have made everything so much more expensive. It might have produced a kind of domestic chaos that would have made the war effort almost impossible.
Well, in the book's epilogue, you write that, quote, "The political and economic experience of America in 1942 demonstrates the fragile nature of self-government in times of stress. Right now, we're in a pandemic, we've got political polarization and a new groundswell of calls for racial justice. You know, we're kind of a nation in stress again. And what do you think Americans now can learn from the experience of 1942?
Well, I think there's a lot. One, if we don't glamorize 1942, if we understand how we were also ripped apart in a lot of ways racially, then it helps us maybe not, you know, sugarcoat what happened in 1942 as some kind of period we want to recreate. But on the other hand, there was a sense that came from the White House, and it came all the way down, that there was something involved here that was bigger than you or me. It was something huge. It was not just the survival of the country, but it was the survival of democracy, which one of the things I wasn't expecting, there's this search engine called Google Ngram, where you can look up a term or a phrase or a person's name, how many times it was used in the printed word over the last 200 or 300 years. And in 1942, the word democracy was used in the printed visage more than any other time in American history because people knew what was on the line. We have a lot, on our plate today, and I don't want to make any quick and fast comparisons because comparing what we're going through today, whether it's a pandemic or racial and social justice, is different from a war. But those kind of raw feelings, I think, need to be taken into account. We need to understand that nothing is certain. Self-government is always a fragile thing, and to not take it for granted, realize that it's really up to us. And one of the things Roosevelt actually did was say, one, people are going to have to do something, whether it's volunteer for the war effort, to be drafted into the military, or work in a defense plant, or maybe just no more than just buying a defense bond. That would be something they could do to help the effort. But he also used the term we don't use very much today, and that is sacrifice, that there is something you might have to give up in the short run or the long run in order to preserve something bigger than ourselves. And today we're struggling to whether people are even going to wear a mask in public. And in 1942, people knew that they might be shipping off like my dad did to serve in the war, where he might be giving the ultimate sacrifice. And so I think those moments, whether it's 1942 or 1968 or the period after the Civil War, are periods that we really need to kind of focus on and think what happened in those moments. Let's not sugarcoat it. Let's look at the evidence and think, how does that apply to us today?
Okay, well, thank you very much, Tracy Campbell, the author of The Year of Peril, America in 1942. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.